Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Your flight to Bristol has been delayed once again. For your entertainment purposes, please listen to the Baggage Claim Monday edition of the Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney. The White Zone is for immediate unloading and loading of passengers only. No parking in the White Zone.
It's Monday, October 7, 2019. I'm Buster Olney. This is the Baseball Tonight podcast. I'm producing back in Bristol. Is Troy Farkas. I am in the lobby of my hotel, Troy, in Minneapolis. And can you believe that on the first Monday of the division series, all four series could end today? All four. We could see right away the end of the division series. And it kind of, I was thinking about this morning, that you and I all year, when we've done our Power 10, we've talked about a separation from the top and the bottom. And that may manifest today. With the super teams moving on, what do you think?
Yeah, seriously, all the top teams have been playing so well so far. They look very impressive. We've been saying it all year that there's always just been a separation. Carl was saying the other day how the Dodgers are just so much better than everyone else in the NL, and you know, it's clearly manifesting itself so far.
All right, on Friday and Saturday, the Yankees blew out the Twins. They'll play Game 3 later here today. The Astros shut down the Rays with Garrett Cole, Justin Verlander. Travis d'Arnaud, Rays catcher, talked about the Rays possibly coming back.
We've been the underdog the whole year. No one has counted us to be, you know, even in the playoffs or anything like that. We've shocked the world many times, and we're going to try our best to do just that. And, you know, we're going to be excited to play at the Trop in front of our fans. And, like I said, momentum is huge. And, you know, if we can just create any kind of spark and, you know, let our pitchers keep doing what they do. I know it's going to be Greinke versus Chuck Nasty, Charlie Morton. We love when he's on the hill, and like I said, if we can win that game on Monday, you know, I think everyone will feel really good about themselves.
Yeah, Game 3 later today in St. Petersburg in that series. On Sunday, the Dodgers and the Nationals, the two teams tied at 1-1. Juan Soto came to the plate with a runner on base in the first for Washington.
Next offering, hit in the air, well struck, center field. That one back there, on its way, it's gone! And the 20-year-old unloads and gives the Nationals the early 2-0 lead. Juan Soto over the center field fence.
Doug Shambi, the legend on ESPN Radio with that call. And that 2-0 lead would hold into the top of the sixth inning. Anibal Sanchez was terrific, but Dave Martinez turned to Patrick Corbin, who started in Game 1 on Friday. This was the day that Corbin would typically throw a bullpen. And in that top of the sixth inning, he would not do well. Russell Martin doing some damage.
The 2-2. Swing and a ball ripped out towards left center field. Soto and Taylor, and that's going to touchdown and bang up against the wall. In to score is Bellinger. Freeze around third. He's on his way to the plate. He'll score. Russell Martin with a huge two-run double into left center field, and the Dodgers have taken a 3-2 lead.
And Kike Hernandez would add on.
Corbin kicks, delivers. Swing and a ball rip. Left field. Soto back. Back some more. It's over his head. It hits the base of the wall. In to score is Martin. Taylor on his heels. Throw to the plate. Too late. Taylor dives in. It's a two-run double for Kike Hernandez, and it's now 5-2 Dodgers.
And Justin Turner would follow.
The pitch to Turner. Swing and a high fly ball. That's well struck left field. That one back there on its way, and it's gone. Turner will touch them all. And the Dodgers unloading here in inning number 6 as they add 3 more. And it is now 8-2. Wow.
7 runs in the innings for the Dodgers. They led 8-2 after that explosion. Patrick Corbin, 35 pitches, 6 runs allowed. Russell Martin provided the coup de grace in the top of the ninth.
The pitch. Swing and a ball rip out towards left center field. That one is way gone over the bullpen and left. Russell Martin, a 2-run homer. And the Dodgers tack on a couple more, and it's 10-4. Have a night, Russell Martin, as he's knocked in 4.
And after the Dodgers' 10-4 victory, which gives them a 2-1 lead in this best-of-5 series, Dave Martinez talked about Patrick Corbin.
I mean, I trust Pat. I mean, he's been unbelievable all year, and I would do it again. I really would. I mean, he was the guy. I just feel bad for him because he went out there, gave us everything he had. He did. So, and once again, you know, he looked at me in the eye after he came out and says, I'll be ready tomorrow. So that's the kind of guys we got on this team.
And he was asked for further explanation on his decision to pull Anibal Sanchez for Corbin.
Yeah, we just had Anibal was at 87 pitches. He gave us what we had. We were at a good spot in the lineup where we thought Corbin could get through it. And he actually, his stuff was good. I mean, he was throwing 94. Slider was good. I think he left one ball up, but he had every hitter 0-2. He just couldn't finish. They let off some good pitches.
Dave Roberts talked about the Dodgers lineup being prepared for Corbin's appearance.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it worked out really well. You know, when you're going to go to Corbin at some point, which we were, you know, planning on, to have certain guys that you might hit for. I love the matchups to combat Corbin. And so, you know, I thought he made some good pitches. And fortunately, you know, we spoiled some good pitches and took some really good at-bats. But it's just a complete buy-in from our guys that, you know, you might not start the game, but you certainly have an opportunity later on the game to impact it. And, you know, it was evident with Freezer, Kike, CT, all those guys impacted that game coming off the bench.
Justin Turner talked about facing Max Scherzer in Game 4 with a chance to close out the series.
Obviously, we know we got our hands full with him, one of their three horses, and we'll enjoy this one tonight and then show up tomorrow and game plan and, you know, try to make him work for every single out he gets tomorrow night, just like, you know, we've done all year long. And we show up with the mentality that we want to win one game that day, every single day. That's how we've gone about it all year long. You know, it's easy to talk about that. I've been on teams that talk about that. It's hard to actually do it, and this team's really good about showing up and putting it all in line and figuring out how to win one game at a time, and that's how we'll go about it tomorrow.
Deep center field.
The game.
It's gone!
Of the day.
The game of the day was in St. Louis, and what a game. The Cardinals and the Braves, the two teams tied at 1-1. Matt Carpenter gave the Cardinals a lead in the bottom of the second.
Soroka from the set, the 1-0. Swing and a pop-up into short right field. Joyce coming on. It'll be called off by Acuna. He makes the catch in center. Ozuna takes off from third. He'll come in and score, sliding in feet first. A sacrifice fly from Carpenter puts the Cardinals on top. 1-0 here in the bottom of the second in Game 3.
Adam Amin on ESPN Radio. Adam Wainwright, it was like that movie For the Love of the Game. We had Kevin Costner pitching on the mound. Adam Wainwright, nearing the end of his career, he was tremendous, flipping in curveballs, keeping the Braves hitters off balance. Here he was in the top of the sixth inning.
It is 2-2 to Freeman. Curveball swung on and missed for strike three. A pump of the fist from Adam Wainwright as he throws six sparkling innings in Game 3.
In the top of the eighth inning, the Braves rallied, and Andrew Miller was called on to face Freddie Freeman.
Slide step in the 0-1. Swing and a fly ball to center field. Waiting for it, Fowler. Underneath it. Makes the catch. And the inning is over. The Braves leave them loaded. Wainwright still in line for the win. Miller gets the job done in the eighth inning. And it's still Cardinals 1, Braves nothing as we head to the bottom of the eighth in Game 3.
Yeah, so the Cardinals held a 1-0 lead. And by the way, Mike Soroka pitched great for the Braves. But the Cardinals now 3 outs away from winning Game 3 of this series. Carlos Martinez entered to close out Atlanta in the top of the ninth. Josh Donaldson doubled, and he's replaced by pinch runner Billy Hamilton. Martinez got 2 outs, and then the Cardinals made the decision to intentionally walk Brian McCann to get to Adam Duvall. A pinch runner was inserted. Dansby Swanson was next at the plate.
Here we go. Martinez to Swanson, first pitch. Swing and a fly ball, well hit to left. Ozuna back towards the track. It's off the wall. The game is tied. Ortega slides into third. A double for Dansby Swanson. And this game is knotted up at 1 apiece with 2 outs in the top of the ninth.
Dansby Swanson with a huge pump of the fist. after they tied the game. Adam Duvall, who played 101 games in AAA, was next to the plate.
Righty on righty, the pitch from Martinez. Flair into center field, coming on Bader. That's down for a base hit. Ortega scores. Here comes the throw home. Swanson scores in the second, Duvall. And the Braves, with three in the ninth, have taken a 3-1 lead.
That's right. And the Braves hold on in the bottom of the ninth inning to win. And Dansby Swanson talked about coming up big.
Honestly, in that situation, I just kind of saw it coming, even just getting ready in the dugout, just how the inning was playing out. That could definitely be a possibility. So, personally, I like to be prepared for every situation imaginable, and that allows me to be able to kind of go out and play confidently when you're prepared for those situations. So, give a lot of credit for wanting to be in those situations, to, you know, playing a lot of basketball growing up, and you know, being a multi-sport guy, just kind of you get put in those situations a lot, and love being in them. And you know, I'm thankful and blessed that I was able to come through tonight.
And here was Adam Duvall talking about his big hit and coming through in the postseason.
There's a lot of work that's been put in this year. And, you know, I just try to go up there and have a quality at bat, play quality defense, you know, be a good teammate, you know, and hopefully everything else takes care of itself. But, you know, I mean, we put a lot into this. We sacrifice a lot, you know, family. You know, we're on the road a lot. We sacrifice a lot for moments like this. And, you know, so you just hope you can come through for your team, you know, when they call you.
And after the game, Cardinals manager Mike Schild, of course, was asked about the decision to intentionally walk McCann to get to Adam Duvall. Our friend Derek Gould asked the question. Troy, if you can just roll in that first answer from Mr. Schild.
So obviously we got a guy third, tie and run. Guys looked over, you know, and want to have a discussion about McCann with Swanson on deck. Went out. Consensus was that, you know, rather take a shot at Swanson. 0-for-6 at that point with Carlos. You know, clearly that's the go-ahead run you're putting on. But you have two outs, and we play to win. Going to play to win the game. You know, everybody felt like that was the best matchup, including the guy on the mound. Took her shot, didn't make a pitch, made him pay. Ultimately, that didn't hurt us in a sense, but we took our best shot to win the game and got a pitch you can handle, put a good swing on it.
Ryan Snitker, the Braves manager, talked about Dansby Swanson.
Dansby's swinging a bat pretty good. I love when teams narrow him down to that situation because there's something about that, his DNA, he likes that spot. And I get it, that matchup, it, you know, it's a good matchup for them. With Martinez on Dansby. Dansby's a kid that thrives in that situation.
And he talked about playoff baseball and with the amazing experience.
Last year was different, you know, just because of the expectation where we were, the games. This is a totally different thing emotionally than I've ever been a part of. Doesn't compare to anything. And I don't know that it's something that you ever get used to. I sit there, I told Walt in the ninth inning, I said, can you believe we choose to do this? Unbelievable. But it was really cool to see the guys. I mean, and this is what they do. This has been their DNA for a couple of years now. I said, it's like an NBA game. You don't want to leave this team in the seventh inning because, you know, they could lay around dead in the water and then everything happened in the last hour of the game or 30 minutes of the game. And that's kind of what they do. They never quit. They never give up.
What an incredible game. We'll be talking with Tim Kirchner about that. Let's get to it.
Steamheads rejoice.
Nerd alert!
It's Timmy time.
Is this a great game or what?
With Tim Kirchner on Baseball Tonight.
And Tim Kirchner covers baseball for ESPN, which means having fun breaking down a game like the Braves win over the Cardinals last night. Tim, how much fun was that?
Well, that was great. The National League playoffs have been really good when it comes to strategy and maneuvering and second guessing. That was really good yesterday.
All right. So what'd you think about Dansby Swanson coming through in the top of the ninth inning?
Well, I've always liked him, Buster. I've always felt like there's a little something different about him. Maybe it's where he went to college, the big games he played in there, big draft choice. He's just got he's just got a different way about him. I recognized that the first time I met him, and he's such a confident kid, but not overly confident. So he got a pitch to hit. I mean, Carlos Martinez made a bad pitch. That's a hanging slider. He can't do that to Swanson, but that's his biggest hit of his life, I'm sure, and it came at the most important time for his team, which, again, I think that's what makes Dansby Swanson a little bit different, is he's got that extra gear that when it really gets tough, that's when he's got to be at his best, and he certainly was yesterday.
I was surprised, and I got to tell you, I wasn't watching on television. I was making my way to Minneapolis, so I was following the game on the Internet, and when I saw that McCann was coming up, I was thinking, boy, Brian McCann, you know, toward the end of his career, and I know he's a left-handed hitter, but he hasn't necessarily been swinging the bat, you know, all that great. And I know the numbers, Dansby Swanson, 0-for-6 in his career against Carlos Martinez, and Mike Shield is a guy who's going to think through all these possibilities. But I was surprised as it played out. What about you?
Yeah, I was surprised, too. Now, that's nothing against Brian McCann. They went for the righty-righty. I just don't think 0-for-6 is a big enough sample to say, let's pitch to Dansby Swanson here. I was surprised they did that. I was surprised they put a runner on base in that situation. But that's one of those things that makes the postseason especially so great, is we can dissect things like that and ask about things like that all the time. Buck Showalter once told me, just because it doesn't work out doesn't mean it was the wrong move. And just because it does work out doesn't mean it was the right move. So I always judge everything based on that philosophy. But I was surprised when Brian McCann was walked to get to Dansby Swanson.
Yeah, I remember walking up to Bruce Bochy during the 2014 World Series, and I said to him, Boch, I'm trying to keep track. Are you an idiot or are you a genius today? I'm trying to remember, because everything always gets seen through the portal of the result, and the result was not good for the Cardinals last night with Swanson hitting that double and setting up that inning. How exciting was that for Adam Duvall, right, to have a moment like that in a year in which he's kind of been a 4A player, 101 games in the minor leagues?
Right, and this is a guy who's, you know, hit 30 homers before in the big leagues and is back in the minor leagues for most of the season, and that was not his only really big hit this season. He's gotten a couple of them, but this one came in the postseason, and it turned out to be the biggest hit of his life, I'm sure. And it just goes to show you again, the Braves have a pretty deep bench there, and they've got some interesting guys on their club who don't even play much. And Duvall's one of them, and that was quite a big game for him.
Well, and give the Braves credit. I know that, you know, Billy Hamilton stealing bases last night was not necessarily pivotal, but and you and I talked when they picked him up about how this could be a guy who could help them out in a close game in October.
Well, Buster, you've been saying this for 2 years. This is the perfect guy. And every time I see him on base, you know something different. Something could happen, and him just stealing third gets him to third base, and now you can't bury a curveball or something like that, can't throw a split in case he's gonna score. And that's what his speed does. Another really nice pickup by the Braves.
What's your sense of this series going forward?
I think the Braves are better than the Cardinals, but this is going five games. I think they're gonna win today. The Cardinals will win, but if they win, then they're going to get Jack Flaherty again, you would think. And I can't believe he's going to lose twice in this series, even though he pitched very well the last time out. I just think one way or another, the Braves are a slightly better team. Their lineup is just a little bit longer. And somehow, some way, they're going to win this series. But obviously, it hasn't been easy, and it won't be easy from here.
All right. Another decision that was talked about yesterday, the choice of Dave Martinez to call on Patrick Corbin on what was effectively his bullpen day to work in relief of Anibal Sanchez when the Nationals held a lead over the Dodgers, and Patrick Corbin just got pounded. I got to tell you, Tim, when I saw Dave Martinez pull in Max Scherzer for a relief inning in L.A., I was kind of torn on that, because we've seen managers use starting pitchers in relief roles the last couple of postseasons, especially A.J. Hinch in 2017, Alex Cora last year. But that really felt like it started in the championship series. It didn't happen quite as much in the division series, you know, for some of the prime guys. And when I saw Scherzer in, and look, they won the game, so it worked out great for the Nationals, but I kind of winced a little bit, like, boy, I don't know, going to that this early in the postseason. But on the other hand, if you're Dave Martinez, you're facing the Dodgers, you are a huge underdog, and top of that, the reality is that his circle of trust for pitchers is not very long. Patrick Corbin is one of the guys he trusted, and he trusted him in Game 3, and it just simply didn't work out. What'd you think?
Yeah, I'm not the biggest let's throw a starting pitcher in relief. I still think most of those guys are creatures of habit, and even though this is all hands on deck in the postseason, we've seen a bunch of starting pitchers be effective in relief. On the whole, I'm not in favor of it. But I'm with you on this, Buster. I did not have a problem with what they did with Corbin yesterday because they have the highest ERA ever, a bullpen ERA of any playoff team ever. Dave Martinez knows if I'm going to beat the Dodgers, I have to shock the Dodgers. I have to do something different. They're better than we are, even up. And that's why he went to Scherzer, which surprised me. But it didn't surprise me with Corbin. And even though Anibal Sanchez was great yesterday, I just think the time they brought Corbin in, especially lefty on lefty to see Bellinger and Seager, was the time to make that move. Again, this is the classic case. Just because it didn't work out doesn't mean it was the wrong move. He just missed location a couple times, got ahead in the count, and couldn't finish anybody off.
All right, what's your sense of this series moving forward?
I think this goes five also. I think Scherzer wins tonight. I think the Dodgers win game five back in their place, and that means they're going to have to beat Steven Strasburg to do that. But at some point, the Dodgers are going to have to beat Steven Strasburg, even though he has been great. But I can't wait to see Scherzer tonight. I think he's going to be snorting and growling and patrolling that mound like a few others. So that's how I think this is going to go.
Now, you've watched this more closely than I have because I've been locked in more into one series. Do you feel like the Dodgers right now are going on all cylinders? Because from afar, it doesn't feel quite like that yet.
Well, I'll tell you, they hit all cylinders in the sixth inning last night, Buster, because that's the first time I said, oh, my gosh, this team might actually lose in this series. I actually thought that. And then they said, not today. And what they did with that bench, and this is one of their great strengths, we know how many homers they hit, but to bring off pinch hitters who did so much damage last night, Chris Taylor with a great walk, David Freese beat the shift and got three hits in that game. Of course, Kike Hernandez hit a huge double for two more runs. So it's just another reminder that the Dodgers bench is usually better than most. Their depth is so good. But I don't think there was any – I don't think they were doing anything other than trying to win. They just ran into some really good pitching with the Nationals. But in the sixth inning, things really turned.
All right, two good series going on in the National League, but in the American League, I was talking to Troy about this at the outset, that it feels like that the power of the polarized nature of baseball has manifested itself because it's like the playoffs started and the Astros and Yankees are going, yeah, we're the best teams in this league. Justin Verlander, Gerrit Cole, completely dominant to the point that Kevin Cash, the manager of the Rays, turned Verlander into a verb, saying the Rays were Verlandered after Game 1. Gerrit Cole was just as good in Game 2. Verlander was asked after Game 1 about his name becoming a verb.
Justin, Kevin Cash was asked about your performance, and he said that his team got Verlandered. How do you feel about your name being a verb?
I don't know. I mean, I guess it's a pretty great compliment. I don't know what else to say other than that.
I think we can say that these two guys, this is Curt Schilling and Randy Johnson, yes? This is Koufax and Drysdale.
Yeah, this is the two best pitchers in the league, at least in the league, and maybe in the game, on the same team pitching back to back. Gerrit Cole is ridiculous, Buster. Counting the regular season, that's 10 straight starts with at least 10 or more strikeouts. Only Pedro Martinez has done that in a regular season career, And Verlander was just as good, maybe not as overpowering. But, yes, this is Randy Johnson, Curt Schilling from nearly 20 years ago, and we all remember how dominant that was.
Alex Bregman, the Astros third baseman, talked about the Astros in October.
Where are Verlander and Cole born for?
October.
How many of you guys are born for October?
We got a lot. I want to say everybody. Tell you this, tonight Roberto Osuna and Will Harris showed that they're born for October. I mean, Osuna came in, huge punch out in the eighth inning, huge punch out. Got a ground ball to me, I should have turned a double play on. And then Will Harris came in, did what he does all year.
Alex Bregman's confidence is never lower than an 11, Tim. On a scale of 1 to 10, I think you would agree with me on that. But you just get the sense that he's speaking for this team and their level of confidence right now with how they're playing.
Right. But they should, Buster. They're the only team in the tournament that doesn't have a weakness, and at least not a glaring weakness. That bullpen's pretty darn good. We've talked about the rotation, and that lineup is so good, Buster. I mean, I know the Twins and the Yankees hit more homers and even scored more runs, but that's the last lineup I want to see. In this strikeout era, they had the fewest strikeouts in the American League, and it really wasn't close. And when they swing, they swing at strikes. And Alex Bregman is the ringleader. He doesn't swing unless he's swinging at a strike. And that kind of discipline in today's game is what separates the Astros offense from everyone else's. And that's why Bregman is so confident, is he looks around and says, we have the best team, and I think he's right.
All right, today you've got game three in that series. Do you think the Rays punch back, or does this turn out to be kind of like, and I wrote this in a column yesterday, like Muhammad Ali taking care of Jerry Corey before they go into the ring against Joe Frazier? What do you think?
I'm going to say the Rays get one today because I've seen Charlie Morton pitch in person a couple times in the last 2 weeks, and he is so good. He throws – that curveball is just unhittable when he's right. And I think in the quirky trop, they get one game, but I think it's over after that. But I'm not betting against Charlie Morton, not with the way I've seen him. And I know the Rays have not swung the bat for two games, but because of who they're facing, I think they're due for a couple of hits in one game.
All right, and the other series, the Yankees, the Twins, the Yankees hitters have completely dominated, 19 hits and 16 walks in a couple of blowouts that they had in Yankee Stadium. That series resumes here in Minneapolis later today. And Tim, a manager told me, when he was referring to the Yankees hitters' discipline that they showed in games one and two, he said, that's the type of discipline that they're going to need if they're going to have a chance to beat the Astros. Now, it's a different type of team. It was very interesting in games one and two, and you had Jake Odorizzi, you had Tyler Duffy, you had guys on the Twins after game two saying, you know what, we have to rethink our approach. Jose Berríos. They continually tried to coax the Yankees out of the strike zone, trying to bait them with breaking balls in the dirt. And at one point, Giancarlo Stanton drew a walk, and he drew four walks in the first two games. He slammed down his bat, and I was explaining to my son Jake, when he did that, it was almost like, you can't tease me with that garbage. What are you kidding? You can't. I'm not going to swing at that crap in the dirt. But that just absolutely jumped out how disciplined the Yankees were in those first two games. What'd you think?
Right, and Stanton's discipline personified the team discipline. He has chased that slider away 1 million times in the last couple of years. When he's going bad, he swings at that all the time. And for him to lay off of that pitch was just a reminder exactly what you're saying. I know what you're trying to do to me, and this time I'm not going to bite. And that's the way the whole team looked at this. And this is what Aaron Boone talks about all the time. His favorite expression is controlling the strike zone. And his hitters are controlling the strike zone now, which means the Twins have to throw a strike. And it's not a very good situation when the Yankees are swinging at strikes, because that's when they can really, really crush you.
I was talking with Aaron Boone before game two and behind the batting cage at Yankee Stadium, and he, at that moment, Edwin Encarnacion was taking his swings, and he just nodded toward him and said, that guy, like, he is so good. And he talked about how, you know, this is someone who completes the link of hitters. Incredibly, in that first game of the division series, it was the first time that the Yankees, because of all the injuries they've had this year, it was the first time they've had Edwin Encarnacion with all their other sluggers, with Judge, with Stanton, with Gary Sanchez, and it just completes a line in the mind of Aaron Boone. What do you think?
Yeah, the final Wednesday, Buster, of the regular season, I did a game from the booth in St. Pete, and Sanchez and Encarnacion were taking BP at the drop. And again, they're trying to get ready to come off the DL, and they put on a light show during BP that was absolutely absurd. And Booney looks at me and just says, are you watching this? Like, can you believe how hard and how far these two guys hit the ball? And, of course, I did believe it because I've seen it many times. But those two guys added to the lineup really brings it to nearly full strength. And Encarnacion, a middle-of-the-order power hitter who doesn't strike out all the time like so many power hitters do, gives the Yankee lineup a different dynamic and a much more dangerous one.
All right, as we move forward, let's assume for argument's sake that the Yankees take one of the last three games. Do you agree with what the manager with another team was telling me, that he feels like, boy, this is how the Yankees have to have their at-bats if they're going to have a chance against the Astros? And look, Verlander and Cole are different than the Twins pitchers because they have the type of stuff that they can get you out in the strike zone. But this manager was referring to the, you know, the fact that the Yankees almost have to have the same type of strategy that they used to have against Pedro Martinez. The old-fashioned run up the pitch count to get to the soft underbelly of the bullpen. And that's something that the Yankee hitters seem at least capable of doing under the right circumstance. What do you think?
Right. Buster, that philosophy is the one, of course, that you covered all those years on a daily basis. In the late 90s and early 2000s is how the Yankees wore pitchers down completely. And they were doing it long before so many other teams were controlling the strike zone and making that pitcher work. Now the Yankees are back to that. And even though you're right, Cole and Verlander present a completely different situation, say, than the Twins pitchers have. But it's a philosophy that's going to work way more often than not if you can wear somebody down and make them throw a few more pitches and wait to get a pitch you can handle.
All right. As the playoffs begin, who was your pick and how are you feeling about that?
I picked at the beginning of the playoffs the Astros to beat the Dodgers in the World Series, and I'm sticking with that at the moment. I'm open to changing again if I have to, Buster, but that's where I'm confident at the moment still.
All right, Tim. Thanks for doing this.
Okay, Buster. See you soon.
Alden Gonzalez is covering the series between the Dodgers and the Nationals for ESPN. And, Alden, you were at the game last night. Did it feel like that, I mean, let's face it, the Dodgers are heavy favorites to beat the Nationals, even though we've talked about the potency of the Nationals because of their rotation. Did it feel like in that sixth inning last night that that was the window of opportunity for the Nationals absolutely slamming shut?
Yeah, Buster, in that moment, after that moment, it felt like that was it. Dave Martinez had a very specific plan for this game, and it was actually going the way that he had hoped. He got five really good innings from Aníbal Sanchez. Clearly, with his spot up in the lineup in the bottom of the fifth, that was going to be it for him. It was a good time to bring in Patrick Corbin. He was good to give them 35 pitches. Dave Martinez was hopeful that those 35 pitches could stretch out through two innings, at which point he could come with the only two relievers that he's going to trust in this series, which are Sean Doolittle and Daniel Hudson. The game was setting up perfectly for them, but you figured, Buster, that at some point those Dodger bats were going to come alive. You can't keep them down for very long. I don't care how good your starting pitching is, and that's just what ended up happening. It did feel like a momentum shift. It felt like that was the Nationals' best opportunity. But having said that, Max Scherzer is pitching at home in Game 4. He could go out and dominate. Rich Hill especially has not been healthy for a while. And then this series could go to a game five with Steven Strasburg, and suddenly the Nationals have the advantage. That's what's so fun about these five-game series. You think the Dodgers have the upper hand, and then it changes so quickly.
Yeah, what's Rich Hill's situation as we move forward to game four later today?
It's going to be really interesting. Rich Hill spent several weeks, close to 2 months, rehabbing an elbow injury. He came back really late in September, and then all of a sudden he had a sprained MCL again, which was the same injury that he had in spring training. And at that point, basically everybody thought that Rich Hill's season is done, his time with the Dodgers is done because he's a free agent at the end of the year, maybe even his career is done because he's 40 years old. But he really wanted to pitch in the playoffs. He did everything possible to get here. I can't believe he's here, Buster. But he looked good in his last start during the regular season. I think he could give them about 4 to 5 innings. I think that's what he stretched out to. And then from there, Dave Roberts is gonna use his bullpen. A lot of his late game high end relievers are pretty fresh, so the Dodgers do have that going for them.
Yeah, I remember as he was going through that process of trying to find a way to pitch comfortably with that knee, he was throwing at Citi Field on a Saturday before our Sunday night game the next day, and watching him throw, he was trying to figure out a comfortable place to throw with a knee brace. Does that seem to be like he's got some level of comfort with that?
Yeah, he does. I think he specifically found a good level of comfort the last session that he threw. I think it was a simulated game. He threw to some hitters at Dodger Stadium as the season was winding down. And what he had been doing was he had been playing around with sort of his placement on his foot on the rubber to kind of not try to trigger the pain when he delivers pitches. But what he said was that with that brace, which was he used the brace, I think, only the last time he actually threw off mound. He said he got to a point where he doesn't really need to change anything in his delivery. He had been experimenting a bunch just to pitch without pain. He said that with that brace, he doesn't have to do that, that he feels like he could just, you know, pitch normally the way he always does. And so I think that was a big breakthrough for him right before the playoffs.
All right, so because he's not going to go deep into this game, they're going to rely heavily on the bullpen. And we talked all summer about how, you know, if we got to October, this would be the Dodgers' question mark. What's your sense now of how that bullpen stands and how Dave Roberts might use Kenley Jansen?
Well, I'll tell you, next to the Nationals, the Dodgers look like they have the greatest bullpen of all time. That's for sure. That's for sure. But, you know, it's interesting. Kenley Jansen's role is kind of vague. Dave Roberts said after the workout before the National League Division Series, he was asked about matching up in the ninth inning, and he was very definitive. He said, no, Kenley Jansen's our closer. He's going to pitch the ninth. He's going to take the entire ninth inning. We believe in him. He showed that his cutter was getting back to its normal life towards the end of the year. And then as this National League Division Series is ongoing, he talks about how Kenley Jansen's still our closer. But, you know, we're open to pitching in different situations, and he doesn't necessarily have to pitch the same situation in the ninth. So, you know, read what you will from that. I think a lot of it has to do with maybe keeping Kenley Jansen's confidence up. They're not going to come out and definitively say that he's not their closer anymore. And he might end up pitching in some safe situations. But I think it's pretty clear, the Dodgers won't say this, but I think it's pretty clear that they understand that they can't just fully live and die with Kenley Jansen at this point. He still has flashes where he shows like he's the old Kenley Jansen, but his cutter is not the consistent force that it used to be. He's had to sequence more so this year with his two-seam fastball and his slider. He struggled with that at times. He struggled with the mechanics of his delivery. His lower body and his upper body aren't always in sync. So they need to toy around with that. So I'll be interested to see how they use Kenley. He hadn't pitched in a while before he appeared in last night's game. Joe Kelly is the major difference maker for this bullpen. He had a really good year after around the middle of May. But he came into the game on Sunday night, and he did not look particularly sharp. And as you know, Buster, he's one of those guys that There are times when he comes into the game and it looks like you can never touch him. And Cody Bellinger even told me after game one that he was watching from center field in that game when Joe Kelly pitched, I think it was the ninth, and he said it was the nastiest stuff that he's ever seen. But then he comes in on Sunday, and it looks like the game's going to get away from him. So it's still a precarious situation in the Dodgers bullpen. I think Dave Roberts, night in and night out, has to get creative with the matchups and ride the guys who look like they're getting hot. Sometimes it'll be Joe Kelly or Kenley Jansen, but today it might call for Pedro Baez and Kenta Maeda. I think at this point there's really no telling.
All right, give me 45 seconds on this. The Angels are early in their process of interviewing managerial candidates. I would be surprised unless money becomes an impediment if Joe Maddon doesn't get that job. How are you seeing that?
Yeah, I see it similarly, Buster, and you've done a great job reporting on that as well. I think it's pretty clear that, you know, even though the Angels are not going to come out and say it, I think it's pretty clear that this is probably an owner-driven decision. I think if Billy Epler had his druthers, Brad Office would have been the guy who sees this through, at least for a few years, tries to get the Angels back in contention. But, you know, you have a guy like Joe Maddon out there who has the history with the Angels that he's had. I think that proved to be too tempting of a hire. But we'll see how this goes, because I still think the Angels, with the jobs that are out there and with Joe Maddon's reputation, at the end of the day, the Angels, I think, still have to sell Joe Maddon on the idea of this franchise being on the right track and winning. Because I would imagine that as much as Joe Maddon might have loved his ties to the Angels, and he does live in the area still, he still has a house in the area, at this age, at 65 years old, I'm sure he wants to be in an organization where he can win. And he has Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani, but then you got to show him, okay, what else do you have? What lets me know that you are on a path to win, especially in a division where the Houston Astros franchise, it doesn't seem like it's going anywhere. So I think they're still going to have some competition.
All right. Alden, thanks for doing this. Great to talk with you.
Buster, thank you so much.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on fields all across America, all around the world. Or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. And Todd, I was thinking of you the other day when I was at the moment that the Rays won the American League wild card game. The players rush on the field. And right behind them are these folks, you know, attendants, I'm sure, with the Rays, running out boxes of caps and T-shirts, to celebrate the Rays win in the wild card game. And the players, you know, they're giving hugs, but they're also rushing over to the boxes, you know, to pull out the swag. And I've always kind of wondered about that, because I've never really thought that those caps and hats look that good. But it's a tradition unlike any other in baseball. Where they don these caps and, you know, AL wild card champs or whatever it said on them. And it kind of made me shake my head. I never thought of those things as being necessarily attractive or something I, as a consumer, would want to buy. But the players love wearing them.
Well, Buster, I mean, come on. Commerce must be driven. And this is the way to drive commerce. And, of course, this occurs with every sport. You see the Super Bowl end and there is somebody rushing into the face of Tom Brady. Or whomever, with a hat and a T-shirt, and they have to get it on. But here's the deal, Buster. I really do wonder, like everything else in life, we don't want trophies for mere participation. Does as special as it is, getting to into the postseason is a special thing. Does a wild card appearance warrant a special cap? I'm not so sure.
No, I don't think so. Troy, you? I mean, are you, if the Texas Rangers next year make the wild card game and then win the wild card game, Troy, are you running out there to buy a Rangers wild card champion T-shirt?
No, no chance. And I'm against the celebrating at every round, at advancing every round. It's supposed to be something special. The caps, the whole celebration, you know, champagne proofing the locker room, carting in all the champagne. You should not be celebrating at every round, because then, like all things, that makes it less special.
Yes, yeah, if everything is special, nothing is special.
Exactly.
But I would say this. I do like the logo, the World Series logo on those caps.
There's still, you know, some of my favorite caps that I've gotten. I always wait at the World Series to buy. I have one from 2015, the Royals cap. I have the Giants cap 2014 with the World Series logo. I love that. I love that look, and I love that whole thing. But I'm not a big fan of this thing round by round by round with the T-shirts. And I just can't, even back in the day when I was a huge Dodger fan, if they had, you know, when they beat the Mets in 1988 for the National League Championship Series, I'm not going out and getting a National League Championship Series T-shirt. What about you, Todd?
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking back to Game 1, 1996 World Series, Yankee Stadium sitting there. And there come the Atlanta Braves and the Yankees for their pregame introductions. And they had little logos on the sides of their caps. That's the first time they appeared. And, you know, those have been on for the World Series ever since. So here's my take on it, Buster. I think that postseason caps, you know, and patches on the uniforms that say postseason – listen, I get it. It's part of what puts food on my table in a very removed way, even though I have nothing to do with that in particular. But the World Series is a whole different situation. It is special. There's continuity and there's history. Put it on there for the World Series. Leave it off for everything else and find another way to generate some income.
I agree with that. But I must say, Troy, you sounded like the oldest of the three of us when you're like, get off my lawn thing about you shouldn't celebrate.
Listen,
I mean, come on.
Listen,
it's a long season. Let them celebrate.
Listen, if you win the AL or the NL, good. Celebrate. If you win the World Series, celebrate. But if you win the division, let's see. Going into the season, you have a 25 or 20% chance of winning your division. Like, it's not that huge of an accomplishment.
Boy, hard market.
Dude, here's the deal, Troy. I guarantee you that if one year you were a beat writer and you're around the team every day from the beginning of February to when that team clinched the division, you would feel differently. Like, all the work that's put into qualifying for the playoffs and, you know, all the batting practice and all the infield work, that matters. Like, I totally get that. If you make the playoffs, that's not an easy thing, Troy. I'm sorry, but you're wrong on this
one. Well, get me a job as a beat writer so I can live the life and be proved wrong.
Well, listen, let me interject and just say, when we start keeping score on this quiz for the 2020 season, Troy could wind up with a whole bunch of champagne poured over him, commemorative logos for the both of you.
There you go.
We'll make this work. Stick it on your laptop. I have no idea.
If I come in second place, though, I don't want any celebration. I don't want any participation trophy. And I know Buster, when he comes in second place, is going to want some form of commemoration.
Well, I've won so often that the celebration is definitely, you know, we've taken it down a notch through the years because I pretty much dominate this thing. And I'm beating Troy this year by one at this point, Todd, as we go into this week's quiz.
So here we go. Perfect opportunity to segue right into it. According to Section 3.03 of the official MLB rulebook, this is the minimum height of numbers for the backs of players' jerseys. Is it A, 10 inches, B, 6 inches, C, 4 inches, or D, 8 inches? The minimum official height of numbers for the backs of players' jerseys, 10, 6, 4, or 8?
Wow. That's a good question. What do you got there, Troy?
I can't believe there's a rule for that. And Buster, the Bleacher tweet yesterday, we had complaints that I'm always the one to answer first, so you're going first this week.
No, sorry. We were set. We addressed that when we started, and you just, you know, as a newbie, you just flew into it. So you start.
All right. So the minimum height.
Okay. I know what I'm going to say.
I think the minimum has got to be 6 inches.
I'm going to say the minimum's 10.
Troy.
Oh, no.
6 inches.
Oh, my minimum.
God.
That's
back,
it,
baby.
That is it. It is tiny.
Wow, yep. I would have guessed.
I don't
six?
Know if
That's
any teams have 10. I think most are 8. It, you know, depends on the font style, which we could really expand upon in a very separate podcast. Whole podcast devoted to font styles for the backs of jerseys. But 6 would be the minimum. And if you remember back in the day, there were some teams, the Tigers and Reds in particular, had teeny tiny numbers and huge names on the back. The Reds brought them back earlier this year for couple of their throwback games. But, 6 is the minimum. So I want you to ask somebody about that during the postseason, Buster. Ask Clayton Kershaw what he thinks of that.
Buster, I knew you were colorblind.
We're tied.
I knew you were colorblind, but you have no excuses for deficiencies in measurements here.
Whatever, dude. We're moving on, and we're tied. Todd, thanks for doing this.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
Bleacher Tweets.
Okay, Buster, some Bleacher Tweets for you on this big playoff day. First one comes from Amy Chapman at Amy R. Chapman. Hey, Buster and Troy, the postseason seems to be following a predictable path. Do you guys agree? And if not, what are the biggest surprises you've seen so far?
Hey, Amy, good question. I'd say the fact that Oakland lost, I thought that the Rays would win that game. And I got to tell you, I'm a little bit surprised that in games one and two that the Twins didn't have more of a counterpunch.
That's a good
the
call.
The fact that their offense was kind of shut down in a way that I did not anticipate. What about you?
Yeah, that's a good call, especially since the way that the Twins' offense has been all year. I would say the results in terms of wins and losses don't surprise me, but I would say just a little bit in terms of how we got there, Max Scherzer coming in relief on Friday night, Corbin getting shelled yesterday. It's been hasn't necessarily played out the way that you might have expected in that sense. Next one comes from CrossFit School of Sweat at School of Sweat. Could all the late-inning rallies cause management to rethink the roles of starting pitchers and bullpens and possibly help us get back to starters going deeper and occasionally even finishing games?
Yeah, School, I think that we're headed in that direction. I mean, I started to hear that more from teams because so many relievers are breaking down. Like, the level of injury for relievers is skyrocketing, and this was the first year, I think in the modern era, that the ERA for relievers was actually higher than that of starting pitchers. I mean, typically, wow, relievers' ERA is lower than that of starting pitchers. I'll get Sarah to confirm that for the pod tomorrow, but I'm pretty sure that that's the case. That's the way it was trending with about a month ago.
Now, but do you think since starting pitchers throw harder now than they ever have before, do you think if we get back to a place where they're going 7, 8, even 9 innings that they would break down too?
Well, I think that no, because I don't think that, I mean, right now relievers are like drag racers, right?
Yeah.
They come in and they throw as hard as they can for 18 pitches. And on the other hand, starters, I think they're not necessarily being asked to just throw nothing but fastballs. They're being asked to mix and match. And what I'm hearing from teams is they feel like they need to get more out of the best pitchers on their staff. In other words, if you're the Dodgers, you want to get as much as you can out of Walker Buehler rather than relying on the five-man relay team of relievers coming in.
Right. I hope we can get back to that spot.
Yep,
next one
me
comes
too.
From Jason Amico at Jason Amico. Do players who missed the playoffs still enjoy watching the postseason?
Jason, some of them do, but I got to tell you, my experience, and I've asked that question of a lot of players in the time I've covered baseball, they don't like watching it. Some of them are still angry about losing, and they are not interested in watching people they compete against during the year have the big stage. And some people, quite frankly, just not baseball fans. It's interesting that one benchmarker for me always when I talk to a player is, are they actually baseball fans? And some are not. Some, like Anthony Rendon, that great quote, he said, baseball's boring.
Yeah, we can be sure when the Dodgers eliminate them that Anthony Rendon will not be watching.
Will not be watching.
Final one is actually for me. This one comes from Joe Eli at Joe618. Troy, what was the bigger thrill? Jumping out of an airplane last Tuesday or finding
out... Yeah, we need to hear that.
Or finding out this spring you're the new producer for Buster's podcast. So backstory. I didn't actually get to jump out of the plane last week. Unexpectedly, the weather was really bad that day. And
right.
So they had
sure.
To, cancel
That's a story.
So I didn't get to jump out of the plane that day. I'm hoping we can make it happen again. But I can guarantee that when I jump out of that plane, it will be a bigger thrill than finding out us watching this podcast.
Oh, sure. Yeah, rescheduled weather. Yeah, sure. That's the reason why.
That's all for today's Bleacher Tweets. Keep them coming every day throughout the playoffs. Use the hashtag Bleacher Tweets.
That's right. Gutless. My thanks today to Alden Gonzalez, to Todd Radom, to Tim Kirchin, and to Troy Farkas, who really did have to cancel his jump because of weather. I back that. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.